The Tom Woods Show, episode 1942.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Stefan Kinsella, guest hosting for Tom again today. Tom is still hospitalized. So if you've been meaning to get around to supporting the show, right now is probably when it's most urgently needed. So go to supportinglisteners.com. Today, our guest is Lawrence Lepard. He's the managing partner and co-founder of Equity Management Associates, LLC. He has an MBA from Harvard Business School and a BA in economics from Colgate University. And we'd like to talk to him today. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Thank you very much, Stefan. It's an honor to be with you guys. And I'm sorry Tom's not feeling well. I'm sure he'll hear this. I hope he mends up quickly.
I think he's going to be just fine and back in fine form soon, and everyone will get Tom back and it'll be great. So I want to talk to you about your background and some of the things you've done. So I know, let me read your Twitter bio here, which is great. There's not many people like you around anymore. Investment manager at Equity Management Associates, sound money advocate, gold stock fund manager, Austrian economist, anti-federalist, CrossFit athlete, and Bitcoin. Man, you'd fit so well at home at the Bitcoin conferences too, especially if you were a carnivore.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I am a carnivore. I love red meat.
So, okay.
Yeah. I mean, probably the most important one in there is Austrian economist. And I think that's the one that maybe your audience will be most interested in. I see you've got a great poster there behind you with many of the famous members of that school. And to me, you know, they don't teach that in college, or not any college I'm aware of. I guess they do in some of the better schools. But the problem, in my view, with the country, and Dr. Paul was the first national politician, or the most high profile, I should say, recent national politician, to understand that the problem with the country is that we adopted Keynesianism. And we went off the sound money standard partially in the 30s with Roosevelt when he outlawed individuals owning gold, and then completely on an international basis in 71 when Nixon closed the gold window. And those two acts, in my opinion, were both illegal and immoral in terms of what it did to people in this country and really around the world, because fiat money is not just a profit and loss issue. I mean, and it is that. I mean, obviously, in a fiat world, you know, the money changers make a ton of money and so many people get hurt. But it's also a moral issue, you know, the issue of what's right and what's wrong. And my belief, a strong belief, is that it's immoral for people to print money and counterfeit it. And they take it away from savers. And, you know, the system we're in has gotten so extreme that the average person can't save the fruits of their labor and expect to have a safe retirement where their, you know, their buying power won't be frittered away if they're dealing in dollars. Now, you can fight that by owning gold and doing other things, but they force you into doing that because of the broken system that we live in. And so that's probably, if I look at the one theme throughout my life, that's probably been the strongest theme that I've, you know, my grandfather knew about it, and he despised Roosevelt, and he knew what Nixon did was wrong. And so he kind of taught me a lot of this stuff. And then my college education, I learned Keynesianism. And then I got out and I started reading all the Austrians, and I realized everything I learned in college was wrong. So I've been a sound money advocate for most of my business career. And my Twitter byline, as you alluded to, as you can see it, is fix the money, fix the world. I mean, I think at the base of a lot of the problems that we're encountering in society today is this unsound money. And of course, you know, this isn't an original idea on my part. I mean, I think Ron Paul, probably more than anyone else, helped me to fully embrace and understand that.
Yeah, I can see why you were attracted to Ron Paul, given your ideas and what interests you. Why don't you tell us about this infamous USA Today ad from 2008 that you were involved with?
Yeah, so when Dr. Paul started running, you know, and he came, as you know, the early primaries in New Hampshire. So I met him there and got to know him a bit better. And I met a lot of his campaign people. And I'm a money manager, and financially I've done okay. I mean, I'm not like all these fiat masters, but, you know, I've been a solid investor and earned income and so forth. And when he started running, it struck me that, you know, we would never have another opportunity like this where a sound money guy was running for president. And so in what was really a big purchase for me at the time, a lot of money, I got together with a few of the people up in New Hampshire. We designed a one-page ad, and we ran it in USA Today right before the Thanksgiving break that year in the campaign. And then we followed it up, actually. We ran a second one in the New York Times. So there were two full-page ads supporting Ron Paul and his candidacy. And we've got some traction, but obviously we didn't get enough traction. And it's unfortunate that, you know, most of the country didn't understand the message he was trying to deliver. But we tried to spread the word, and it did spread, and it's continued to spread. I mean, I would say that I'm encouraged to see both the Liberty and Sound Money movements growing larger and being more and more successful. I mean, Young Americans for Liberty, which Dr. Paul founded, has done a great job in that respect. And, you know, there have been other spinoff things, and there are a lot of institutes that are good in that respect. And the Mises organization that I see is also on your wall, you know, has done a great job there too. So, you know, it's slowly but surely. And I mean, ironically, even Bitcoin with, you know, Bitcoin's brought the sound money notion to millennials. You know, Saifedean Amos wrote a book, which I think is really an excellent book. I highly recommend it. Not as an advocacy of Bitcoin, but just as an advocacy of sound money. You know, the first half of the Bitcoin standard really is just an Austrian economics text.
Yeah, that's one great thing about Bitcoin, I think, is it's actually exposing mainstreamers to Austrian economics.
Well, that's right. I mean, and you've got, you know, I mean, all my kids and a lot of my kids' friends, they're Austrians and they get it. They're like, why are we letting the government counterfeit money? Why are we letting them steal our labor by inflating the currency 10% every year? This is wrong. I mean, why, you know, why can't grandma and grandpa get a good return on their savings that they worked their whole life for? Because interest rates are driven down, because, you know, the Keynesian model has forced us to drive interest rates down. So yeah, more and more people are seeing it, more and more people are learning it. And it appears though we're getting closer to an end game, and which might be kind of chaotic, and that's unfortunate, could be unfortunate for a lot of people, but it has to happen, in my opinion, because there was always a fatal flaw with the mechanism that they set up. And the bright side of that, trying to be an optimist and being positive about it, is that, you know, I think on the other side, we're going to return to sound money because it's really no other choice.
Right.
You know, and that, in my opinion, will be a much better world when we do that.
Yeah, I heard one of your interviews and you were explaining that the softest landing, so to speak, will still be difficult, but it could be if basically the dollar is remonetized with some backing like gold or even Bitcoin, which I think some Bitcoin advocates think might happen, where the dollar would just become the payment rail for Bitcoin by being denominated in terms of Bitcoin. But who knows what really will happen?
The major issue is that something needs to happen that takes the control of the money out of the hands of the politicians. And gold supply is limited, Bitcoin supply is limited. And the politicians running the money, I mean, why anyone thought that a group of politicians could do a better job of running the economy and the money than the free market, as, you know, as it was before. Why anyone ever adopted that belief, it's kind of beyond me. I mean, I obviously, you know why people adopted the belief, because the politicians who were in control knew that they would benefit from
right.
it, obviously. But for the rest of us, it's been disastrous. I mean, that's in 1971 terms, I mean, the dollar's lost, I don't know, it's over 80, maybe it's over 90% of its value. I got to go do the math. I haven't done it recently, but it's a lot. And, you know, what remains, we're probably going to lose that too if the trend that we see today continues, and it appears to be continuing. I mean, they're now passing another stimulus bill, another infrastructure bill, and they can never stop, really. I mean, they have to just keep going until the end point. You know, at some point, people will say, we've had enough, and there will be a revolution. In some form, it doesn't necessarily have to be kinetic. It could just be a political revolution, and a true Ron Paul-like candidate will win.
Well, as an anti-state libertarian, I always point out that the government is good at nothing except for two things. It's good at destruction, like war and actually tearing things down, and it's good at propaganda. Like, it perpetuates this idea that people have that the state is necessary. I think Hoppe calls his book The Great Fiction, and thing it does is with money, it's persuaded everyone that inflation is this external enemy that the government helps us fight. Like, there's no connection between, you probably remember back in the, I don't know, the Ford years or something, they had this whip inflation now. Like,
oh, sure.
We need to fight inflation. We're helping to fight inflation. Like the government is your defender against this external threat. They have nothing to do with causing it.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, it's, look, the government, I mean, and the founders knew this, and that's why Ron Paul, so we all called him a founding father, because he really was. He, you know, I mean, the founding documents of this country are still a thing of beauty, and the principles upon which this country were founded and supposed to follow, if we could return to those, you know, there would be a lot of great things going on in the world. The unfortunate thing is that left to the devices of man and legislatures and judiciaries and executives, a lot of those things have been twisted. And so we're not really getting what we thought we got. I mean, it's obvious. It's so obvious in some areas. I mean, let's just take, for example, the money. I mean, the Constitution says that only gold and silver can be money. That's the Constitution of this country. And yet, FDR outlawed it, right? And the Supreme Court upheld it. I mean, what? WTF, right? I mean, you know, and that's not the only case. I mean, there's just case after case of that, of how it all got watered down in service of the interests that would benefit from it, and taking advantage of the natural trend of some Democratic people, of natural trend of voters, to vote for things that were unethical because they thought they would benefit from it. Mm-hmm. You know, okay. Well, yeah, I know this isn't really what the Constitution wanted us to do, but, you know, I'm going to get something out of it. Okay, I'll go for that.
Yeah. Speaking of the USA Today ad you did, I was Googling it, and I spent almost an hour trying to find a copy of it because there's all these old forums with JPEG links, and they're all dead now.
I can send you an email. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought maybe if you would send it, we could put it in the show notes.
I'd be happy to. Yeah, I've got both it and the New York Times one. The New York Times one's even more lengthy. I felt a need to kind of explain, you know, the logic, and I just didn't want to be silent. And, you know, it was a lot of money. I mean, for me, it was a lot of money for anybody, but for me, it was particularly a lot of money. And I mean, since then, my wife has several times kind of given me shit, you know, why did you spend the money on that? And I said, well, it was kind of a one-shot deal. I mean, this guy had a chance to be president. I thought he could change the world. And if he didn't justify support, nobody does. And so it was worth taking the chance. And obviously, it didn't work. We didn't get him to be president, but, you know, not for lack of trying on the part of some of us. And there is a Ron Paul-like politician in our future. I very much believe that. That, you know, the circumstances will make it such that somebody with his views will emerge and everyone will go, oh my God, that's obvious. Why didn't we think of that? Mm-hmm. And he or she will become a leader that will take us back onto the path that's correct, which is a sound money path.
Yeah.
But
well, I wonder, did you happen to run into Vijay Poyapati during that 2008? I think he was helping Ron Paul then too. And he's also the author of another great Bitcoin Austrian book.
Yeah, he's great. He's brilliant. No, I did not meet Vijay. No, I didn't. I met a lot of neat people though. Mm-hmm. You know, the Ron Paul people in general are just great people.
His book, The Bullish Case for Bitcoin, is another really good book in the literature that promotes sound money.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about some of your views on investing.
Sure.
You seem to be kind of interesting in that a lot of the gold bugs, like the Peter Schiff types, bash Bitcoin left and right. You seem to have a really balanced, measured approach to it. Like you know that you can't predict what's going to happen, but you think there could be a role for both. And right. I think you even said you predict that probably in the end, Bitcoin could win out over gold, but it won't be a quick process. So there's a role for both for some time. Why don't you elaborate your thoughts on that?
Thank you, Stefan. That's a very accurate description of it. It's sad for me to see Bitcoiners fighting gold people or gold people fighting Bitcoiners, because we're really, to me, it's one team and we're on the same side, right? We're all fighting fiat, right? And we want sound money. And I get it. I think a lot of gold people are butthurt because, you know, Bitcoin's done better recently than gold. But there's a role for both. And I just try to look at them objectively in terms of what they are. And, you know, look, gold is still the most widely accepted senior form of money in the world. And it is sound in terms of stock to flow. Until Bitcoin came along, it was the soundest form of money. Right now, they're about tied. And by sound, you know, I measure sound by stock to flow. And the stock to flow on the two is about the same right now. At the next halving, the Bitcoin will be harder. And, you know, gold is very hard money. It only grows, the supply only grows at 1.75% a year. But what that does mean is that within 40 years, the supply will double. And the Bitcoin's actually deflationary money, which is quite an experiment. I mean, the notion that, you know, there's a 21 million, you know, coin cap, we're not there yet, we're at 18, growing there slowly, you know, and then some of those have been lost. I mean, that's an interesting concept, that we could have a deflationary currency. And some people just say, by definition, you can't have that, which I disagree with. There are risks in Bitcoin. I mean, I view Bitcoin as being a digital form of gold. Gold is old sound money, still quite valuable. And I think we'll have a role for 50 years or more. And by the way, you know, when the boomers go to try and buy sound money, they're much more likely to buy gold than Bitcoin. Bitcoin to me is emerging sound money. What's so neat about it is it's based on a technology and it's incorruptible. I mean, the blockchain is immutable. What's a little scary about it is just the possibility of any technology's potential to break or not work. I mean,
correct.
You know, we've all seen our computers go blue screen. But as I've watched the Bitcoin community grow and develop, and I think of the number of nodes there are now, and I think of the core development team and what they've done, and the fact that it's worked successfully for 12 plus years,
yeah,
I'm kind of the view that, you know, it's proven itself. I mean, it's got to be taken very seriously as a form of sound money. In some ways, I mean, one advantage it has versus gold is, you know, try to move $1 billion worth of gold. I mean, you're talking about a lot of weight and a lot of security and a lot of everything else. I mean, you can literally transfer $1 billion worth of Bitcoin from address A to address B and, you know, in the next blockchain, and that's 10 minutes. And
yeah, as you pointed out in one of your interviews, the price of gold looks like it's been heavily suppressed for quite some time.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah. I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's like, it's sad that gold really hasn't worked. And the reason I strongly believe the reason that's true is that the people who run the fiat system are very aware of the existential threat which gold represents to their game. And so they created this paper gold market that they've used with off-balance sheet transactions to crush the gold price and to prevent it from going up. I mean, Paul Volcker wrote his memoirs, and I read them very carefully, and he said in there that they knew in the 70s, after the fact, that they made a mistake by letting gold get out of hand. And that was what caused them to have to go put up the 20% interest rates. Well, you know, they're obviously going to try to not make that mistake again. But it's interesting because they're going to have a hard time. One, more and more people are taking delivery of gold, and you can't, you know, you can print as much paper gold as you want, but you can't print a gold ounce. You know, everyone knows what they are. And then two, you know, Bitcoin comes along and there's no fake Bitcoin either. I mean, it's a mathematical formula. You either own it or you don't. You either control it or you don't. As I say, there's a technical risk there that I think is pretty well addressed. I also think there's a government risk. I mean, obviously, if governments had been smart, you know, to maintain their power, they'd have all jumped on it early on and tried to squash it. I think it's too late. I mean, I think absent 10 years in jail and being shot for using Bitcoin, you know, which I kind of think is unlikely to occur because it's a technological innovation. And even the central banks themselves are trying to develop their own currencies, which I think is very, very humorous because there's no way anyone will adopt them when Bitcoin exists. But, you know, absent that, Bitcoin is going to kind of swallow you know, a lot of people's savings as I see it.
So, yeah, I think the government, unlike a lot of Bitcoiners, I think the state could do lots of damage if they put their minds to it. But I'm of the opinion they're going to be too slow and stupid. And
yes,
by the time they would have realized it's a threat, too many congressmen are going to have Bitcoin themselves, you know? So,
well, that's exactly right. I mean, it's funny. And even on the gold side, you know, it's like The Big Short, right? I mean, I'm pretty convinced we're in that point right now where all the wise guys right now are getting their gold stores. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories. I know people that are, you know, in the gold business and that are in New York and that, you know the Goldman Sachs partners. And I mean, all the, you know, the BlackRock guys, et cetera. I mean, I think, you know, I would say to your listeners, you know, you're foolish if you don't think that all the fiat guys realize the issues going on here and they're buying gold like crazy. I mean, I even heard a story, which I can't really talk about, but some people that you would think would, you know, that are very much on the other side in terms of their public persona with their personal money, they are buying and stacking gold in Switzerland. Mm. And they can see what's coming. I mean, it's, the system's got a fundamental flaw, and that is you cannot expand. This is at the top of my Twitter feed. You cannot continually expand debt in excess of GDP and have the one support the other, because the cost of the debt is supported by the GDP, and it's just simple math. If you compound one line at 7% and the other line at 3%, eventually the 7% line starts to go vertical, you know, and that's kind of the stage we're at right now. I mean, look at the way the debt grew, and each and this is why I think it's so interesting for you, me, all the people in this area. You know, we're now getting to the point where it really is kind of going vertical, and it's going to be a problem. I mean, you know, in 2008, they printed over the course of, I don't know, from 2008 to kind of 2011 or something, when they're doing QE, I mean, it took them that long to get like $3 trillion out the door. Well, they did that in a couple of months.
Right.
In 2020, right. And they kept going. You know, so the total stimulus recently, you know, I added up the other day, it looks like it's about $6 trillion and growing. So in my opinion, we are getting into the end game of this monetary system. but it's hard. It still makes it hard to know the slope, and there's going to be a lot of volatility. And I know a lot of people in the gold community and even in Bitcoin are kind of hurt. You know, it's, oh my God, you know, if you chase it and you chase it with leverage and then you buy Bitcoin at 60 and it goes down to 30, you're like, you know, it happens really quick. A lot of people are like, well, what kind of a store of value is this? I can lose 50% of my money in 3 months. Well,
right.
What we have going on here is really like tectonic plates clashing, and there's going to be a lot of volatility. In my opinion, the way I'm dealing with it is I want to be on the right side that I think is going to last long term. And I know gold and Bitcoin are the right side. And then I don't use much leverage, if any. And I would recommend that strongly to all your listeners, that you just don't want to be levered. You know, we're talking about something that hasn't happened in 100 years, which is the collapse of a global debt bubble. And we're talking about something that hasn't happened really ever, except perhaps with the Roman Empire, which is, you know, the collapse of a world reserve currency that's based on fiat. And you want to play those two things with leverage, thinking you can get every little zig and zag one way or the other? Be my guest, but good luck. And as right as I know we are, it's no fun. I mean, look, last August, everyone was all jazzed up, thought gold was going to 4,000, and it was at 2070. And you know, I was selling a few gold stocks because they'd gotten ahead of themselves. And, you know, the next thing you know, I mean, here we are a year later and we're back down at, you know, 1800. And at one point we were in the high 1600s. So there's volatility in this stuff, and people need to be aware of that. But over longer spans of time, I strongly believe, I'm sure you do too, and I know most Austrians that I'm in contact with agree, that we are on the right side of history here, that you know, 2 years out, 5 years out, 10 years out, you know, you want to have these forms of monetary insurance, because, and that's really what they are, because, you know, the dollar, we can almost know with certainty that the government will do whatever it can. As you said earlier, the government's really good at keeping itself alive. You know, that's its number one job, is to keep itself alive. And how do they do that? Well, as crises erupt, they print dollars.
Let me summarize what I gather to be your kind of investment approach, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be probably avoid bonds because they're about to go bad. So it would be some kind of investments, including a home, real estate, but also gold and silver and some of the related mining stocks and things like that, if you know what you're doing, and maybe some Bitcoin and maybe some equities. So is that kind of generally your advice?
I think that's generally right. Let me even get more specific and boil it down a little bit. I mean, I think I've had people call me and say, I want to put some money in your fund because I want to protect against monetary debasement, you know, make money on gold stocks. I'm like, okay, fine. First question I ask is, do you own any gold coins or silver coins? I think everybody needs to have precious metals in their possession. I'm not talking about GLD in a brokerage account, because GLD is a paper product, or SLV in a brokerage account. I'm talking about real coins hidden somewhere or stored. In my case, I store them with a depository where I pay. You know, they got a lot of guys with guns standing around them, so I know nobody's going to be able to rip them off. And I don't want to have them in my house. I don't want somebody coming here saying, give me your gold coins. I have nothing at my house. But you know, I think owning gold and silver coins is kind of a base layer of wealth preservation. They will go up in value. I mean, if you look at it, gold's gone up in value since 2000, kind of on an average basis. Gold, in most currencies, gold's gone up about 8 or 9% a year, which is kind of what I think we've had in terms of inflation in the last 22 years. Even they've reported it 2 or 3, they're lying about it. We know that. So if you have gold coins, gold and silver coins, that's your best form of savings, in my view. And that should be the base of anybody's wealth. And the older you are, the more of that you should have, kind of like in the old bond equities thing. I mean, those would be your bonds. Those would be your safe things that will always have value and will go up every year. And they don't pay interest, but if you had to sell 5% of them a year to live off of it, I know people who've done that. I have a friend who quit the business, the money management business, in 2000, took all his money and bought gold coins at $250. He hasn't worked since then, and he sells whatever coins he needs every year to pay his expenses. And so, you know, you can do that, and I think that's the base. Then you decide, all right, now I'd like to get a little more than my 8% a year. I'd like to take some risk and try and actually invest and make a return, because to me, that's not even investing. That's just holding sound money that's going up in value against paper money, which is going down in value. Investing, putting your capital to work, you know, with an idea of trying to make more than the rate of inflation. And so then you start to think about stocks. And of course, in my view, because the price of gold and silver is going up, gold and silver stocks are the most attractive stocks in the world right now. And, you know, I think they will be for some time. you can also obviously you add in Bitcoin to that. And I mean, Bitcoin, in terms of performance since inception, Bitcoin's growing at a 200% compound annual rate. And I don't really think there's any reason why that's, I mean, it's not going to stay at 200%, but, you know, as Paul Tudor Jones says, that makes it the fastest horse in the race. And so what I've said in my podcast and what I say to friends is, good God, no, don't take all your money and put it in Bitcoin. That's insane. But to have zero Bitcoin is really suboptimal because, you know, we know that there are only 21 million of them. There are only 21 million millionaires in the world. So not every millionaire can.
I think it's 45 million, actually.
Yeah, right. So not even every millionaire can have one coin.
No, they can't even have one third.
Yeah, there will come a day, I believe, 10, 20 years from now, people say, you have an entire coin?
Right.
You know, oh, my God, right? And you can buy an entire coin today for $35,000, the cost of a used car, a nice car. So I think everybody who has some capital should have some piece of it, 1%, 5%, 10%, you pick the number, in Bitcoin. Because I sincerely believe that these coins will someday be worth between $1 and $10 million per coin. Now, I also want to add to that, that might also be an environment where gasoline's $100 a gallon.
Correct.
You know, I mean, we're going to have a lot of inflation. But my point is that this is an asset that has a limited supply and it's got a continually growing user base. And it has a lot of qualities that make it very interesting as an asset. The thing that's unfortunate is because it's very volatile, because there are a lot of charlatans in the whole crypto area, there are a lot of people who look at it and have a very negative visceral reaction, say, oh, this is a bubble. This is a complete bubble. And I think it's very interesting. I think it's interesting to compare it. It's not really. It's a network thing. And it's interesting to compare it to Google or to compare it to Amazon. A lot of people thought Google and Amazon were bubbles. And in fact, I have to say, I looked at both of those stocks 10 years ago and I thought to myself, I can't buy these. They're too expensive. They're just too damn expensive. And yet, I think that what I missed there and a lot of people are missing with Bitcoin is what I call the network effect, which is, you know, the notion that networks don't grow in value, linearly, right. They grow exponentially in value. And so, you know, this is like, to me, and I was an investor in the internet, this reminds me very much of the early days of the internet. And if it gets to the point where everybody is using Bitcoin,
right,
you know, the price per coin is just going to have to be much, much higher than it is today.
Yeah, it's like most bubbles have to pop. But
right,
when money's being adopted, it's a bubble that grows and doesn't have to pop.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, it's, you know, people compare it to tulip bulbs, but, you know, tulip bulbs are, you know, it's just totally different. It's completely different. And so to me, it's an amazing technological innovation. Just absolutely amazing, almost God-given in terms of what it means for the society. Because I think that one thing I think most people just don't understand is how much friction and how much we've lost as a result of not having sound money. I mean, fiat money has allowed people to create wars. It just allows all kinds of misallocation of resources. It lets the wrong people get rich. I mean, it just does not.
And it has cultural and moral effects, too, on the nation, the way they look at life and their time preference and the way they look at saving.
Exactly. I mean, and you look at some of these great examples of hyperinflation, like Weimar Germany is the famous one, the most knowledgeable. I mean, when that was going on, I mean, all the morals fall apart. Just everything falls apart because nothing, you can't predict the future. Nothing's certain. I read an interesting story on Twitter a day or two ago. We're talking about somebody knew a gentleman who was 80 years old, spent $60,000 a year, had a $2 million net worth, and felt like he needed to keep working, okay? And the reason is he was afraid. He didn't know what his $2 million was going to buy him and what his cost of living was going to be. I mean, the fact that somebody who's earned that much money, you know, and has that modest a lifestyle can't safely retire, I mean, that's just criminal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely criminal that none of us know what the money is worth. And that's why if you go around society, everything is mispriced. Everything. I mean, you know, higher education. I mean, I've got a son in college. It cost me $70,000 a year to send him to college. I mean, is that worth it? No. I just got my healthcare bill from Blue Cross. My healthcare bill is $3,000 a month, $36,000. That's a middle income salary. Now, admittedly, Blue Cross is a very good plan, and I have it because my wife is very insistent on us having a good plan. But it's also got, you know, a $26,000 deductible out of network. So So basically, I pay $36,000 to protect myself in case I get in a terrible car crash or I have a heart attack. Because I can assure you that in terms of, you know, going to the doctor and maybe I go half a dozen times a year, I probably don't spend $3,000 a year on healthcare.
You know? I think I saw you on Twitter battling people. I got to say, I admire your style. People tell me I'm too pugilistic, but you know, compared to you, I'm a pussycat.
Yeah,
some guy accused you. He said, oh no, Obamacare works fine. You're lying. And you said, you blocked him instantly.
I just blocked him. Yeah. Don't say what I said. No,
you
know, look, I mean, I'm on Twitter to try to educate people and try to help people.
Yep.
I try to keep my ego in check. It's not always easy to do, but I know that I don't know everything, but I do feel very strongly about these things I do know. And when people want to get on there and argue with me or give me shit, that's not what I'm there for. And I just block.
No, it's not. That's not the forum. And if they're not sincere,
I just block them.
I mean, if they're not sincere, they're not there to learn or constructively engage.
If somebody has a question or they want to debate it civilly, yeah, that's fine. But I view this as a very important mission. I mean, look, financially, I'm fine, right? I'm very lucky. I've got a great wife, great kids. You know, somebody said, why are you doing this? I'm doing this, you know, and I want to be here forever. My father died quite young. I'm doing this because I want my legacy to be, I was on the right side of the battle to try to fix this money problem. And I think it's a really big problem. And I want my kids and their kids to live in a world that's better than the world that we live in. I think a lot of stuff's broken. We can all see it. It's obvious. I mean, you see it in the cancel culture. You see it in the, you see it everywhere. You see it in politics. I mean, this is not the America that I grew up in, you know, where people were civil and there was a sense of decency and fairness. This has become, it's become a real catfight, and it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And I think we could fix it if we had sound money. I think things would be much fairer for everybody.
Well, back on the investment question, let me ask you one other question. For several years, I've been sort of an adherent of Harry Brown's permanent portfolio idea.
Oh, yeah. That's a great, great book.
Splitting your money up into 25% stocks, bonds, cash, and gold, basically. And I've thought for a while since Bitcoin, and now given the hyperinflation or whatever may be coming, that maybe that should be modified to basically shift some of the cash and the bonds into gold and Bitcoin and equities.
I think that's right. I mean, I'm not sure how much Harry, when he was writing that, was thinking through the whole monetary debasement thing. But if I were to look at a Harry Brown portfolio today and say 25% cash, 25% gold, or I mean, 25% bonds, I would lighten those two up. Because the reason you want to have the cash is obviously, and I have some cash, is if there's a big deflation and suddenly everything goes on sale, you'd like to be able to invest it and, you know, buy things that are cheap. So, and there could be a big deflation, by the way. I mean, it's so funny the way all these Keynesians have been fighting and fighting and fighting deflation. We might still get one. I mean, if we have a really serious collapse, you know, we could have a 1929 deflationary kind of event. And if you did, you know, having cash would be nice. Bonds, on the other hand, boy, I don't see, I mean, to me, they just look like a guaranteed loser any way you look at it. I mean, because you got a counterparty, you're not sure they're going to give it back to you. And then you don't know what it'll buy because of the monetary debasement risk. And I mean, it would be one thing if you could say, okay, well, I'm going to buy this nice bond. It's going to yield me 3, 5, 7% a year. Of course, you and I both know there's none of that. You know, you buy a 10-year U.S. Treasury, which is arguably the safest thing in the world, which is kind of funny in and of itself, given how bad the government balance sheet and P&L look. But, you know, you buy a 10-year Treasury and you get 130, 140. I mean, that's not much of a return, you know, for giving your money to the government. So
one more thing I wanted to touch on. Tom had mentioned he had seen you railing at CNBC for some kind of advice, like everyone's going to need to invest in kind of riskier equities just to escape the effects of inflation. What was that about?
Yeah. Well, they, you know, and BlackRock and some of these other guys, I mean, they're all, they're shoving everybody into equities by killing the bond market. And by creating this inflation, they shove everybody into equities. And equities aren't appropriate for everybody. I mean, equities have risk. And, you know, equities certainly aren't cheap. I mean, by a lot of measures, you know, that Warren Buffett and others have used, if you look at the equity market cap today as against GDP, you know, this is a bigger bubble than 2000 or, you know, 2008. And so, you know, and 8 was really more focused on housing. But so to me, it's criminal that, look, Wall Street sells what Wall Street sells. They sell stocks. So they have, you know, they're positive on equities 24/7. Obviously, I sell gold, so I'm positive on gold 24/7. But let's look at the record since 2000, which is when I think the big monetary debasement began. You know, and they never tell you this. gold has outperformed the S&P since 2000. The return on gold has been much higher than the return on the S&P. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but as last time I looked, it was like 1.5 to 2x. And that's meaningful. And this is just gold. This isn't gold equities, just underlying gold. And so the problem we've got, Stefan, is that we've got this measuring stick, this yardstick called the dollar, that's kind of flexible and keeps moving. And, you know, okay, yeah, and that's the other thing that's evil about the way the whole government's set up. So you buy gold, you make money on it, and you sell it. Well, you got to pay a capital gains tax on that. Well, all you really did was preserve your purchasing power, but they tax that.
Right.
You know, because, you know, really what happened is gold didn't go up, the dollar went down, but because you were in an asset that did better than the dollar, you have to pay them some more money in taxes. I mean, really? It's just not right. And, you know, you've gotten to situations where there are people who really are seeing half of their life's productive labor going into the government in some form, whether property taxes, sales taxes, personal income taxes, you know, you name it. You know, and then, of course, at the very, very highest levels, these guys have figured out how to game the system so that, you know, a guy like Jeff Bezos pays no income taxes, or Bill Gates pays no income taxes, or Warren Buffett paid very little income taxes. Like, what's that all about? So it's a very, very broken system. And at the core of it is this unsound money. And people despair and say, well, we're never going to fix it. Well, not true. We will fix it. The thing to keep in mind is there are many, many, many more of us than there are of them. The people who benefit from this, they live in New York and they run the financial system. The rest of us, we live in the rest of the country and we make shit happen and do stuff. And the way to do it, it's real simple. It's drain the swamp with where you put your savings. And so I love this whole silver squeeze movement and the notion that, you know, I mean, and I know I have guys who, you know, are blue collar friends of mine who literally, whenever they get some extra money, they go buy some silver coins. They just continually buy silver coins.
They're hodling with silver.
They're hodling in silver. And there are other guys who hodl in Bitcoin, and there are guys who hodl in gold. But the point is, to the degree that we all have savings, we get a vote on where we put them. And if you want to return to a sound money standard, you take your savings. I mean, one, it's a good investment. You'll do better, in my opinion, than you will in damn near anything. Unless you, look, if you pick the hottest stock in the world, you know, obviously, you know, I'm sore that I missed Google or something. I mean, there have been very good stock investments. But in general, if you take the S&P 500, I think you're going to do much better in Bitcoin, silver, and gold than you'll do in the S&P 500 in the next 10 years. And so by putting your savings in a place that you take it out of the system, you don't leave it in their system. You put it into an alternative form of money. It's a vote against their system. And if enough of us do that, if this word spreads widely enough, if the Ron Paul message gets out there, the sound money message gets out there, if the Austrian message gets out there, and it is, it's getting out there, then their system's going to collapse. And that's, to me, that's a really exciting possibility. And it's coming because, as we all know from Malcolm Gladwell's book, there's this thing called, you know, adoption curves and tipping points. And so if you go and you look at the history, the automobile, 10% penetration in the early 20s. By the early 30s, 10 years later, it was 30% penetration. Cell phones, same story. Computers, same story. And so I would submit that we're kind of at the stage right now where we're maybe about 10% penetration of the sound money message. I could be wrong. Maybe some people think we're at 2 or 3. I don't think it's that bad. So, and we're certainly not at 15 or 20. But the number of us who believe in sound money are growing. And more people are aware of the inflation and asking themselves, how do I fight this inflation? And once it becomes really obvious, and Bitcoin just crossed about the 10% threshold in terms of Americans who own it.
And as more corporations do the MicroStrategy corporate treasury
exactly,
approach.
Exactly. You know, there'll be more Michael Saylors. There'll be more corporations who say, hey, this is a good asset to hold. What's going to happen is there's going to be a landslide. It's going to go, it's that 10%, 10 years from now, the people who use sound money alternatives as their form of savings could be 80 or 90%.
Right.
And if that's the case, fiat dies. And if fiat dies, guess what? You know, Nancy Pelosi doesn't have a job. You know, and Joe Biden, all those people, they don't have jobs. And if we're trading each other with silver coins and the dollars, I mean, you know, you watch, this is going to get really, really interesting if this stuff starts working in a big way, because it was kind of this, and by the way, this was kind of happening in the 70s. And I was there as a teenager and I remember it. And it took off when gold went to 800. and there was talk that the dollar was going to fail. And Volcker obviously realized the risk and realized the solution, which was to take interest rates up to 20%. But they can't do that today. If they take interest rates up to 3% or 5%, the economy will collapse. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's going to come a point where the government's going to have to say to themselves, holy crap, we are really in deep doo-doo here. We got to fix this. And my gut is what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to say, okay, if they have the gold in Fort Knox, and of course, Dr. Paul told me once that he doesn't think they do, and neither do I. But if they, you know, they're going to have to reset the currency to something that's sound, gold or Bitcoin. I think probably the first choice will be gold because it's been around longer. And by doing so, they'll stop the hyperinflation that's taking place, or that serious inflation that's taking place. And it'll be painful. Don't get me wrong. But I've studied a lot of hyperinflations. And when a hyperinflation occurs in an economy and the reset occurs, which is to say, people go, oh my God, you know, this money's worthless. What are we going to use for money? And they go to sound money. Economy recovers. This is not, I mean, if we don't get into a shooting war, things can be repaired. I mean, the factories are still there. The people are still there. What's broken is the money. And so, you know, okay, fine. The money's broken. Let's fix that money by going back to a sound money. Now we've got a sound money. People know, you know, once you have sound money, people know what the prices are and they know how to work within sound money. And they have, you know, it works. It just works. It's worked for hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, everyone says, well, the gold standard didn't work. That's a bunch of bullshit. And this country has never enjoyed a greater period of health and growth than it did from 1789, you know, the founding of the Republic till, you know, till we went off the gold standard in the 1930s. I mean, that period, you know, the well-being of the average American increased just enormously in that period, you know, partly because of the Industrial Revolution, but also because we were on sound money.
Yep. You know? Well, Larry, I want to thank you for your time and for your insights. Where can people find you?
Oh, two things. I'm on Twitter at Lawrence Lepard. So, and I am a loudmouth and I am aggressive. And if you want to argue with me, I'll block you. but also I write newsletters quarterly. I have a website, which I will tell you about. And the newsletters are free and they offer commentary. And it's the name of my firm is Equity Management Associates. So the website is www.EMA, Edward Mark Alpha, followed by the number 2. The numeric number 2.com. So if you go to www.ema2.com, there are a lot of interviews and papers and my quarterly reports are there. And then you can join the email list so that every quarter I write a commentary about sound money and where I think the best opportunities to invest are and what the fund I manage is doing. And so and those are free. And if you get on the email list, I won't spam you, but you'll get the quarterly reports. And so, as I say, I mean, my mission outside of taking care of my family is just to advocate for sound money because I think it's something that will really make this world a much better place. And I think it's inevitable and that's a very good thing. There's gonna be some bumps along the way, but that is what it is, right? I mean, we can't control that. We didn't, you know, I say to a lot of people say, well, what you're advocating for is gonna make things really rough. Well, it might, but you know, I didn't found the Fed. You know what I mean? I didn't confiscate the gold, you know, I didn't set up a broken system that we've got. You know, I didn't ignore the Constitution. So I anticipate, I bring this up, Stefan, because I anticipate a time, and I've seen the trend recently where they're talking about domestic terrorists. Well, given the way they're trying to control the narrative, how long is it before they think that gold people are, you know, or even you see Elizabeth Warren attacking Bitcoin recently. Well, Bitcoin's out to destroy the monetary system. Well, yeah, maybe. But guess what, lady? It might need destroying, you know?
Right.
And so sound money is the way to go. And they're the ones who broke the system. And we're the ones who have, in my view, the solution to that problem. And the sooner we adopt it, the better we'll be. Hopefully we'll adopt it soon. Hopefully things will come to a head and we'll adopt it soon. So,
all right, very good. Thanks a lot and have a nice evening.
Thanks, Stefan.
Thanks.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.